Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. We just got word about Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn's involvement in the cover-up of the Senator John Ensign sex scandal and bribery case. The report by Senate Democrat and Republican Johnny Isaacson from here in Georgia, and who is the Democrat? The report shows that the great family values hypocrite, Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn, is as much of a con artist and liar as every other Republican. According to Huffington Post, Tom Coburn played a more active role than previously known in the negotiations between ex-Senator John Ensign and his former aide, Doug Hampton, whose wife, Ensign, was boinking and then tried to pay the family off to keep it quiet because, you know, they're such good family values Christians. The extent of Coburn's involvement is made clear in the report released Thursday by the Senate Ethics Committee that accuses Ensign of serious criminal violations, not civil, criminal. Now, you know, Ensign resigned from the Senate earlier this month, about a day before this report was going to be made public. And, you know, he admitted to having an affair with his little honey, Cynthia Hampton, wife of his former aide, and during a two-year inquiry into whatever violations Ensign committed, Senate Ethics Committee found that not only did he violate campaign finance laws and got involved in a cover-up, but also Tom Coburn was involved as an intermediary in negotiations between Ensign and Doug Hampton. In other words, Tom Coburn handled the hush money. Son of a bitch, can you believe this? Of course you can. These are Republicans. These are Republicans. Coburn negotiated the payment to Doug Hampton down from $8 million. That's how much Hampton wanted. He wanted $8 million. You're going to have sex with my wife? $8 million. Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, somebody established that she'll do it for money. It's just a matter of how much. I guess she had to, or her pimp had to get involved. Who was her pimp? Not her husband. Her husband's just a jerk. Tom Coburn. My God. Negotiated it down to about $2.8 million, according to the report. I love the way Huffington Post puts this. The Oklahoma Republicans' involvement in the cover-up of the affair could lead to uncomfortable questions for the senator and his party going forward. Really? You think? What was this about, a $93,000 payoff that Ensign's parents tried to make or did make? That was apparently the cover story. I'm not going to get too far into this because I haven't read the full report yet. This just came to me, and it's at Huffington Post. According to the report, Daniel Albrecht, I guess, that's Hampton's attorney, that's the cuckold's attorney, Albrecht. According to the report, Albrecht, the attorney, called Coburn. The lawyer told Coburn that the cuckold had proposed $8 million to resettle his family and find a new job. The cuckold's attorney told the ethics committee that Coburn counteroffered, calling the $8 million figure absolutely ridiculous. Instead, Coburn reportedly said the Ensigns should purchase the Hamptons' home and give them some money to live off while they look for new jobs. In a third call, the cuckold's attorney proposed payments for the Hamptons of $1.2 million for their home and $1.6 million for relocation. During that five-minute call, Coburn said he thought that was reasonable and that he would take the request to Ensign. Of course, Ensign refused to pay that. Coburn, when he testified about this report, said, "No, I'm a negotiator. No, I didn't do that." But he acknowledged he spoke to Hampton's attorney, Albrecht's. For what? Oh, I see. Coburn said to the ethics committee that he was simply planning to pass along information to Ensign. "Ah, no, I wasn't negotiating anything. I don't have anything to do with it. No, no, not me. Wow, what are you talking about?" Now, Ensign, of course, was, or Coburn, was one of the men to confront the other senator, Ensign, about ending his affair with the cuckold's wife. According to the report, Coburn, along with C Street Christian Fellowship's evangelical leaders Tim Coe, David Coe, and Marty Sherman, talked to Ensign and Doug Hampton at their group house on February 14, 2008. Blah, 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 blah. All these people are involved with the family, a Christian cult that the C Street house is affiliated with. It just goes on and on and on. Coburn staged a second intervention for the for Ensign about a month after the February 14th talks. I'm going to read a little bit more. I really don't care about this kind of garbage, you know, Republican slop bucket crap. You know, this is the only reason I do is because it so thoroughly demonstrates the massive hypocrisy, deceit, and lies that these Christ murdering Christians involve themselves in all the time. You bunch of swine. Now, the honorable thing, come on, I'm a lawyer talking about Republicans. I know. The honorable thing, of course, would be for Tom Coburn to resign and take his ass back to Oklahoma and, I don't know, do whatever he was doing. Isn't he a OBGYN or something? He's a doctor, I think. I think he's a doctor who tries to deny women health care services and unless they, I don't want to go there. You know, it's a whole different scandal, I guess. I don't know. But Tom Coburn, if he had any honor, would get his ass out of the Senate. He would just align himself, as he has, with John Ensign and say, "Yeah, we're both a couple of pimps. We're both a couple of hypocritical Christian right-wing Christ-murdering pimps. Here we are. You don't like it? Bite us." Isn't that what they usually say? My. It just never stops, does it? Hey, this hour is sponsored by Bill the Bowling Machine Mechanic from Minnesota. Hi, Bill. Bill Bachman, he says, "Remember, you talked one night about setting pins for 10 cents a line?" Yeah, I did. "We need your voice now more than ever." Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the sponsorship. We appreciate it very much. Yeah, I remember that. Remember that night, Kathy? You got in a conversation with this guy. He called in. I think it was when I was working for Air America. He said he was a bowling machine mechanic, a pin-setting machine mechanic. I said, "Oh, my God, you know, I used to set pins 10 cents a line." I still have some bruises to show for it, too. Oh, my goodness sakes. Coburn is a physician, isn't he? I think he is. Yeah. Yeah, he's a physician. That's his day job. His night job, apparently, he's a pimp. It's hot out there for a pimp. We'll be right back.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. By the way, I want to send a shout out to a woman who has been running a thread at Democratic Underground for this program. The Malloy program for, oh my God, how long, Kathy? Years. Years. And she had a birthday the other day, and I forgot. And she, her Democratic Underground name is Ralps, R-A-L-P-S, Ralps. She's a cat lover. And she posts a thread every night, and without her efforts, there wouldn't have been a Democratic Underground thread. It's been up. She's been doing this, I'm trying to think, 7, 8 years? I mean, it just seems like forever. Back in the day when Democratic Underground's forums were about, you know, one of the few places you could go to post comments and talk about stuff. And, they still have a very active online community there. DemocraticUnderground.com. So to Ralps, thank you. Happy birthday, and thank you for all the years that you've been doing this. I really appreciate it. I don't know how many people were introduced to my program through her efforts. So thanks a lot, Ralps. Okay, let me see what else we got here. Oh yeah, the John Ensign and Tom Coburn thing. It's beyond icky. I mean, and then when you think about Newt Gingrich and all these freaks who just I don't know. It's not the fact that they cheat on their spouses and they lie and they sneak and deceive people. That's something that they can work out with their spouses and their therapists and their phony ass religions and deceiving their children and their lie. You know, they can handle that or not handle it within the strictures of their own marriage. The thing that bothers me is their filthy hypocrisy. Every single Republican is a hypocrite. I've said that so many times. They're hypocrites, they're liars, they're cowards, but mostly they're hypocrites. And the proof just keeps bubbling up. I've got something for you about Newt Gingrich that is is going to, you know, Newt Gingrich has gone completely over to the dark side. This guy has become some kind of I don't know, his weird body has been taken over by some alien force. It's just astonishing. Newt, who could never keep his zipper zipped, who was borderline agnostic. Who, I don't know how to describe him. Like I said, I more or less than more, know about this freak. He's the one who Sean Hannity rode hard to get where he's at, Hannity, and Newt was happy to have Sean ride him. At a time when Newt was under an awful lot of pressure, Hannity was working a local radio station in the Atlanta area, and Hannity did for Newt what Monica did for Bill Clinton. And, well, not quite, because what's her name? Callista was doing for Newt what Monica was doing for Bill Clinton. Oh, it gets so complicated with these Republican freaks, doesn't it? But Newt is just such a pig. I mean, he's such a pig. This pseudo, he thinks he's Napoleon. I don't know, maybe he thinks he's Jesus. It's just astonishing, this little twerp, or Nixon, or Kissinger, somebody. Oh, I'm an historian. Oh, I'm a college professor. Oh, I'm an intellectual. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Newt Gingrich is so 1990s. Go away, you pudgy throwback to a But that's not the story. That's not the story that I've got for you. It's just Gingrich, because he's from here. He's from this part of the woods down here. Not actually. I think he's originally from Iowa. But, you know, he spent so much time here, was a congressman from here, was a college professor at Carrollton College. It's now University of West Georgia. It was West Georgia College. Now it's the University of West Georgia. But he has this opinion of himself that is just astonishing. He's never had the charisma beyond that of a you know, badly encased sausage, frankly. He always wanted to be a Bill Clinton. He wanted to be Ronald Reagan. He wanted to be somebody that was good looking, and or intelligent, and or popular. He was a kid that always got pantsed when he went to elementary or middle school. They were always pulling his drawers down and you know, making him expose his little pimply butt. And it just stuck with him all these years. He's really out of his mind. But he's gone over to the dark side, and I'll show you when we come back.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
My name is Luca. I live on the second floor. I live upstairs from you.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Bill the Bowling Machine Mechanic from Minnesota. Bill Bachman. Thanks, Bill. He writes, we need your voice now more than ever. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the sponsorship. Newt Gingrich. I've been watching, first of all, the sorry bastards who represent the leadership of the Republican Party and these teabag freaks, how they all went stark raving mad about Barack Obama's attempt to give the insurance, the health insurance industry, a huge gift last year, which eventually the Congress did. Back in, what was it, 09? Gosh, everything just kind of runs together after a while. Barack Obama, there were a couple of good things in Barack Obama's plan, and the it wasn't really his plan, it was the Democrats' plan. There were a couple of good things in there, but essentially, bottom line, it was a huge handoff to the health insurance industry. And while Republicans, who are dumber than dog droppings, ran around with their mouths open talking about, oh, it's socialism, oh, it's government control, Medicaid, doctor, blah, blah, all this garbage that, you know, that Grover Norquist had insisted that it be framed a certain way. Government-controlled health care. That was the framing. And, of course, there was nothing of the sort, but our whorish lapdog media, no offense to sex workers or dogs, took up the meme, the framing, and ran with it. So all these halfwits show up at the town hall meetings a year ago, or whenever it was, and screaming and frothing at the mouth like half-witted Republicans are wont to do. Okay. So now here we are later, everybody gearing up for the 2012 presidential race, and two people who were deeply supportive of some of the ideas in the Health Reform Act, Mitt Romney and, ding ding, Newt Gingrich, are now trying to backpedal like crazy. It's fun watching Mitt Romney, you know, who said, well, no, I only meant we should do this in Massachusetts. I didn't mean that everybody in the country should have what we have in Massachusetts. No, just kidding. Well, what about Newt? At the Huffington Post again, they just had some winners today. It says Romney is far from being the potential 2012 Republican presidential contender with the most politically problematic record on health care. That would be Newt Gingrich. After he fled Congress, because he was about to go through, well, he eventually did go through, and it was shamed, a typical Republican. He became a vocal champion for mandated insurance coverage. That's part of the health reform plan that kicks in when? In 2013, 2014 or something? That's the very provision of Obama's health care legislation that the Republican Party now declares as fundamentally unconstitutional. Oh, the framers of the Constitution never meant this. No, that's right. The framers of the Constitution had slaves, too, you halfwits. But anyway, the mandate for insurance coverage, a mandate is you got to do it, was hardly some little discussed aspect of Gingrich's plan for health care reform. In the mid-2000s, he partnered with then-Senator Hillary Clinton to promote what is laughingly referred to, laughingly by me, a centrist solution to fixing the nation's health care system. A July 22, 2005 hotline article on one of the duo's events, Clinton and Gingrich, described Gingrich as endorsing not just state-based mandates, which is the linchpin of Romney's Massachusetts law, but, quote, some federal mandates, end quote, as well. Ooh, federal mandates. A New York Sun newspaper, that was a now defunct right-wing newspaper that thought they were going to take on the Times, a New York Sun write-up back then of what appears to be the same event noted that, quote, both politicians appeared to endorse proposals to require all individuals to have some form of health coverage, end quote. Oh, Newt, you anti-constitutionalist hypocrite, you! Neera Tanden, who was an aide to Clinton at the time, said that both Clinton and Gingrich backed the mandate idea. Now, you can do a simple newspaper archive search, which is what Huffington Post did, and you find all the proof of this you want. At a health event in Omaha in 2008, Newt Gingrich said it was, quote, fundamentally immoral, end quote, for a person to go without health care coverage, and then show up at an emergency room and demand free care. Fundamentally immoral. At a speech at the Greater Detroit Area Health Council annual Health Trends Conference in April 2006, Gingrich said he would require Americans earning above a certain income level to buy health insurance or post a bond. What? That sounds like, let me think, socialism! Newt Gingrich said he would require Americans earning above a certain income level. Well, that's class warfare, Newt! Oh, Newty, what are you doing? Americans above a certain income level to buy health insurance or post a bond. Now, that was in the Detroit Free Press. In June 2007, in an op-ed in the Des Moines Register, Newt Gingrich wrote, quote, "Personal responsibility extends to the purchase of health insurance. Citizens should not be able to cheat their neighbors by not buying insurance, particularly when they can afford it, and expect others to pay for their care when they need it," end quote. He added, "An individual mandate should be applied," quote, "when the larger healthcare system has been fundamentally changed," end quote. Mandates, orders. Why? That's social. No, that's communism. Communism! So not only is he a serial adulterer and a hypocrite, he's a communist! Oh my God, a communist! And I have never seen a copy of his birth certificate. Have you? Was he born in this country? Where is Newt Gingrich from? What kind of a name is Gingrich? Gingrich, what is that? Newt! That's a lizard! That's not his name! Where's this guy from? I want to see his birth certificate! I want to see who signed it! In one of his books, in 2008, his book, Real Change, he wrote, quote, "Finally, we should insist that everyone above a certain income level buy coverage. Or, if they are opposed to insurance, post a bond. Meanwhile, we should provide tax credits or subsidized private insurance for the poor," end quote. What? Subsidized private insurance for the poor? OMFG! That's socialism. Newt! You're a commie! Who'da thunk it? Oh my God! Newt! Newtster, what are you gonna do? Sarah Palin is going to cut him off and hand him to you, buddy. What are you going to do now? In his book in 2005, Winning the Future, he expanded on the idea in more detail. He wrote, quote, "You have the right to be part of the lowest cost insurance pool, and you have a responsibility to buy insurance. We need significant changes to ensure that every American is insured, but we should make it clear that a 21st century intelligent system requires everyone to participate in the insurance system." He continued, "People whose income is too low should receive vouchers and tax credits to buy insurance. Large risk pools should be established so low-income people can buy insurance as inexpensively as large corporations." What? What? He went on, "Furthermore, it should be possible to buy your health insurance online to lower the cost as much as possible." Low-income people should be able to buy insurance as inexpensively as large corporations. OMFG squared! And it wasn't just insurance coverage mandates that Gingrich supported. According to a July 21st, 2005, Gannett News Service article, Gingrich also said that he would have Congress mandate physical education 5 days a week for all elementary and high school pupils. What? Forced PE? Well, that sounds like Michelle Obama. Oh, my God. Now, Gingrich joined his Republican colleagues criticizing the work of Obama, calling the Affordable Care Act madness and indefensible. But Newt is pretty much in keeping with what you insisted. Ah, what's next, Newt? Do away with cookies and make the little brats eat broccoli, right?
My promises are snapped in two. Words are meant to bend.
I think I want to win.
He's not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Bill Bachman, the bowling machine mechanic from Minnesota. And he writes, we need your voice now more than ever. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the sponsorship. I appreciate it. Newt Gingrich, more supportive of individual mandates where it concerns health insurance than Mitt Romney. How's he going to explain all this? Congress should pass a law demanding PE 5 days a week for all elementary and high school pupils as a way of combating obesity and diabetes. Well, I happen to be in favor of that, but I am a socialist. I am a democratic and economic socialist. You bet you're bippy, but Newtster? Well, he is too. Unless he's running for president. And then he's a proper God-fearing Catholic who, you know, became God-fearing once the woman he was boinking when he was married to someone else convinced him that because she had such a beautiful voice, she sang in the choir, that Newt finally used that as the catalyst, of all things, to convert to Catholicism. Oh, boy. It's just, aren't Republicans a zoo? Every single one of them. And now we find out that Tom Coburn was in the John Ensign boink his AIDS wife episode. Coburn was in it up to his eyeballs. And that whole family religious cult over on C Street or P Street or J Street, whatever the hell it is, that nest of Christian cultists who helped, is it Uganda, get a law before their legislature to execute gay people? Oh my God. Tom Coburn, John Ensign, Newt Gingrich, Sarah Palin, Donald Trump, Mitt Romney, funny man Huckabee, woohoo, Ron Paul. Look, you know, I figure this country is lost to corporatism anyway, so come November 2012, just for the sheer hell of it, I may vote for Obama again, just to add one more vote to this monstrous wipeout he's going to do to the Republicans. Okay, maybe not. My God. David writes, if Jesus returns on May 21st, like everyone is saying he will, and starts promoting social justice, the Republican Teabagger Party will paint him as a socialist Marxist out to destroy the U.S. Of course. Of course. It is just, I mean, I want to get to the oil companies that testified today asking for more welfare. These filthy, filthy pigs. As it, Senator Chuck Schumer asked the head of ExxonMobil, do you think you should continue to get your tax subsidies? Or do you think that the money, the $21 billion that you're sucking out of the American taxpayer's pocket while you're charging them $4 a gallon for gasoline, do you think that should go maybe for education, children's health care? And this filthy capitalist pig sat there, and his answer made it very clear that he wants the money. Well, of course! How many times have I said on this program to my 37 listeners, and how many times have they said to me something that everybody really knows if you still have a brain left? These capitalists don't care. They don't care about your family, your kids, your mama, your granny, your auntie. They don't care about any of you. And they love to see you brain-dead Republicans continue to vote in their butt boys into Congress. So the hearings like that occurred today with the five oil company CEOs sitting there, those kinds of hearings are soon going to be a thing of the past. Because when corporate capitalist America completely takes over, I mean really, you're never going to see a hearing like that again. But there they sat, just like the tobacco company executives. There they sat. Rex Tillerson. He called the proposed tax changes where these filthy predators would lose their tax subsidies paid for by the American public. He called that misinformed and discriminatory, as well as counterproductive. And then he said, quote, by undermining U.S. competitiveness, the people supporting this would discourage future investment in energy projects and therefore undercut job creation and economic growth. Isn't that what they always say? There they sat, BP, ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, predators, vampires, liars, thieves. They would steal your socks without removing your shoes. Scum. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Let's do this one first. The FCC Commissioner Meredith Atwell Baker is leaving the FCC to become a lobbyist for Comcast. Just 4 months after she voted as an FCC Commissioner to approve the Comcast takeover of NBC. Oh my God! And we wonder why you and I, not these dumbass Republicans, we wonder why people like you, people like me, and normal people, why we are, disgusted with Washington is not really the way to put it. Cognizant of the fact that we now live in a corporatocracy or a fascist state or in a country where capitalism makes all the decisions. They don't make decisions about who to fire and what companies to move to China. That is so last century. They make all the decisions. Where we will go to war. What company or what countries we will invade and occupy. How much death of American soldiers the public will tolerate. How many times we will get a headline talking about a missile strike in one of these countries where civilians are wiped out and still sit on our asses and not say anything. Capitalist America makes all the decisions now. Including whether or not Meredith Atwell Baker gets to lead the FCC after voting for the Comcast NBC takeover and becoming a lobbyist for Comcast. Remember the guy who voted, who is the piece of human waste? Some southern politician. Oh, God, I'm drawing a blank. There's so many of these scummy Republicans. He voted for the, or he led the effort during the Bush years to the unfunded, was it the prescription drug? I think it was prescription drug benefit, quote, quote, for seniors, for people on Medicare. Of course, it was unfunded. But he was the one that led the effort to make sure that Social Security Administration could not negotiate the price. They had to accept what the pharmaceutical industry said they would sell it to Social Security Administration for. And then he left and went to work as a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. Cockroaches! If I only worked on satellite radio, the second and third syllables of that word would be entirely different from roaches. You get my drift? FCC. Republican. Well, of course she's a Republican. I don't know how much information you want. Billy Tawson. That was it. Thanks, Irish Dave. Billy Tawson. Meredith Atwell Baker started on the FCC July 31st, 2009. So she wasn't even there 2 years. She was appointed by Barack Obama. She was unanimously confirmed by the Senate. Obama. Anybody want to comment on that? Barack Obama. 4 months after being one of the commissioners to approve the merger of Comcast and NBC Universal, Ms. Baker accepted a job with Comcast to oversee its government affairs office beginning June 3rd. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But you know what we'll do about it? You and me and the rest of America? Nothing. Oh, by the way, she is also in favor of ending or working against net neutrality. She wants two or three highways on the Internet. You know, for the rich people that you and I can't get to, the corporations that you and I might get to if we're good little slaves, and then, you know, the rest of it for us, I guess. Oh, by the way, Meredith Atwell's Baker's father-in-law is James Baker, the guy who argued before, or no, he led the campaign to get the Supreme Court to appoint George W. Bush. See how tight these circles are? See how tight they are? oh my God. Her great-great-grandfather was an ambassador from Texas to the United States when Texas was a republic. Her father was a former past president of Lincoln Liberty Life Insurance. I mean, this woman has a very big Texas pedigree. I mean, her family is woohoo. Yes, sir. Absolutely. You betcha. So just another example of and Barack Obama, of course. Good old liberal progressive Barack Obama. appointed her or nominated her. She had to be confirmed. Good God. The Big Five oil companies in the first quarter of this year raked in $32 billion in profit, not in sales, in profit, $32 billion. But they and the Republican whores, no offense to sex workers, in Congress say the oil companies need taxpayer subsidies. They got to keep having the subsidies. If they don't have the subsidies, well, what are you going to do, boys? Move your refineries to China? Huh? Rex Tillerson, CEO of ExxonMobil, sitting there on his amply padded ass in front of the senators, most of whom are owned outright by capitalist America. I don't know what the theater is about. The questions sounded like they were coming from the Democrats, sounded like they were coming from people who are not owned outright by capitalist America, which I guess is just part of the game. That's so those of us sitting at home will go, hey, go, Chuck Schumer. Yeah, go, Chuck Schumer. Okay, go. He said that the proposed tax changes, taking away the subsidies that these capitalist predators now get from you and me, right out of our pockets, and the funny part comes right out of teabaggers' pockets, too, but they don't care. You know, they're too stupid to care. But he called the proposed changes misinformed and discriminatory, as well as counterproductive. He said it would undermine U.S. competitiveness. What the hell are you talking? Competitiveness where? On the oil futures market? Are you kidding? No, he's not kidding. They use words like that because they know that the teabaggers and the bobbleheads and the Republicans and the dumbasses will sit there and go, yeah, see, Barack Obama's a socialist, and he wants to destroy U.S. competitiveness. Senators Robert Menendez of New Jersey, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, and Claire McCaskill of Missouri have a proposal to end tax subsidies for five oil companies. Now, of course, they call this a tax increase. Of course. Just like ending the Bush tax cuts for the billionaires would be a tax increase. Of course it would. Sure it would. More on this when we come back. This is just, it's driving me into hysterical peals of laughter. We'll be right back.
Watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Oh, yes, it is 21 past the hour. So anyway, three senators, Robert Menendez of New Jersey, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, all Democrats, would like these predatory capitalists in the oil industry to give up their subsidies that they don't need. I mean, the bastards, between the crowd of them, what did I say? They made 36 billion in or 43 billion or trillion or quadrillion or quintillion, all these, you know, all this money. And the price of at the pump just keeps going up and up and up. of course. But apparently, here it is, $32 billion in 3 months. 3 months. Menendez, Robert Menendez, New Jersey, said earlier this week that, quote, we simply can't afford to keep giving away billions in taxpayer handouts to oil companies that are doing nothing to help lower prices. Why are we subsidizing the oil industry? Come on, you right-wing teabag halfwits. Have you got an... Oh, never mind. I was going to say you have an answer to that. You couldn't find your asses with both hands. You don't have an answer to anything except this. He's from Kenya! So a group of Democrats from the Finance Committee, where these hearings were held today, I guess, they wrote a letter to the oil executives earlier this week urging them to just go ahead on their own and renounce the subsidies. Just, you know, all right, guys, here's what you need to do. Just stop taking money from the taxpayers. You don't need it. You're making billions upon billions of dollars for your rapacious pockets, in addition to the fact that you're murdering the planet. You are murdering the planet. You are polluting everything you touch. Unilaterally renouncing the subsidies seemed an action that was going to be very unlikely, right? The letter said, quote, we urge you to take this opportunity to publicly admit that given your company's prodigious profits, you no longer need taxpayer subsidies. Now, the ranking Republican on the committee, Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah. In the first place, see, there wouldn't be a Senate hearing if the Republicans had the Senate. None of this nonsense. That's why I say this will probably be one of the last times that you'll see this kind of theater. But Senator Orrin Hatch said that the Democrats were playing a cynical game in asking the oil companies to back off from taking money out of taxpayers' pockets. Orrin Hatch says, well, that's just a cynical game, trying to blame the oil companies. While, and this is where Senator Orrin Hatch shows how crazy he is, he insisted that Democrats intended to raise gasoline prices in order to reduce consumption. Now, when I say he's insane, of course he is. How do the Democrats raise prices on gasoline? How do you do that, Orrin? No, I realize that you don't give a tinker's ass about truth or fact, you cultist freak. But how do Democrats raise the price at the pump in order to get people to reduce consumption? Oh, my God. Not satisfied with making a total ass of himself to normal people, Hatch went on, quote, so while the American people ask Congress to do something about high gas prices, the response of Democrats is to rail against oil executives to mask the fact that their policy is actually to make the price at the pump more painful. Oh, my God. He called the hearing a dog and pony show, which it is, Orrin, but not for the reasons that you insist it is. And he even showed a blown up picture of a dog riding a pony. This is a United States senator. He is a member of a very sick cult, but he's still a U.S. senator. So, time to reframe the issue. Marvin Odom, president of Shell Oil, argued that high oil prices result not from oil companies' greed, but from an ever-changing confluence of political, economic, and climatic factors. So they reframe it. It's not subsidies. It's not the oil companies getting money from taxpayers. No. It's a tax increase. It's a tax increase. It's that socialist Barack Obama. So, Orrin Hatch, apparently the oil company's main whore on this committee, no offense to sex workers, sits there with his thumb in his nose or wherever he likes to put it and says, well, you know, the Democrats, they want to raise the price at the pump. Tell me how that's done, Orrin.
Progressive talk. It's Mike Malone.
Oh. 25 before the hour. The Big Five oil companies, $32 billion in profit in the past 3 months, and BP didn't show a profit in the past 3 months. So that means four of them. Now, while these hearings, while these hearings are going on, and by the way, coming up next hour, the other energy predator that is going to get the Malloy treatment is the coal industry. They are invading our schools. Did you know that? You didn't. Coal industry. While all this is going on with the oil executives and and their people in Congress, and by the way, I just had something in front of me here. Where did it go? Let me just find it. Yeah, here it is. Contributions. Political contributions connected to the five oil companies that were testifying before the Senate Finance Committee today. This is over the past decade. BP, $628,000. 33% of that went to Democrats. 65% went to Republicans. Chevron, $1,604,397. 18% went to Democrats. 81% went to Republicans. ConocoPhillips, $1,154,198. 14% went to Democrats. 86% to Republicans. ExxonMobil, $2,609,337, 9.6% to Democrats, 90.4% to Republicans. Shell, 303,000, 27% to Democrats, 73% to Republicans. Now, what does that say other than the fact that the Republican Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of just about every capitalist on the level of these oil companies who can stuff money in their pockets? That's what it says, A. B, what it says is the oil companies also give to Democrats. And the disgusting part is the Democrats take it. Now, I don't see on this list that Reg sent me, I don't see how much Senator Charles Schumer got from the oil industry, but I will guarantee you that it's probably a hefty amount. So for you right-wing pigs who continue to send your drivel into my email, most of which gets kicked out and you get a nasty form letter, why don't you people ever just try to use your brains? Can you still do that after 20 years of filling your head with Rush Limbaugh and 5 years of filling your head with the suicide Glenn Beck and 15 years of filling your head with Sean Hannity? Can't you? Maybe you people can no longer think independently or think critically, but why are you so willing so willing to let these people just smack you around over and over and over again, and you have the audacity to call Obama a socialist when he is doing exactly what the rest of these people are doing, what your Republican punks are doing, and you have the nerve to write to me and call me a communist or a socialist? I'm not a communist, but you're goddamn right I'm a democratic socialist. You betcha. So when you decide to write me your emails like that, just remember the Brer Rabbit story. When Brer Wolf was about to eat him, or was it Brer Bear? And Brer Rabbit said, "No, don't throw me in that briar patch." You don't know what I'm talking about, do you? Of course not. Now, while all this is going on, Shell Oil. Shell Oil is seeking permission to drill 10 exploratory oil wells beneath Alaska's Arctic water. 10. As Clifford Krause in the Times put it about a week ago, or 2 weeks ago, quote, "The forbidding ice-clogged region is believed to hold vast reserves of oil, potentially enough to fuel 25 million cars for 35 years. Ooh, now isn't that a fun statistic? Clifford Krause, the writer, forgot to include how much that'll contribute to the global meltdown that this planet is experiencing and how much quicker that will bring about the collective death of everything on Earth. But we do know enough fuel to run 25 million cars for 35 years. Shell has led the way among all the oil companies, working for 5 years now. See, they have long-term plans. 5 years to convince regulators, environmentalists, native Alaskans, and several courts that Shell can manage the process safely. It can protect polar bears. Ooh, we're going to protect the bears and other wildlife. Safeguard air quality for residents and respond quickly to any spill in the region. Christ. Now, well, I mean, anybody want to, I don't know, lay some odds about whether or not this particular clutch of capitalist earth murderers will get their way? Of course they will. Are you kidding? I like this sentence. Shell's renewed application will pose a test for President Obama, who promised to put safety first after the BP spill. But he has also reiterated his support for offshore drilling. Barack Obama, a socialist? You dumbass teabag right-wing Republican freaks. You are so stupid. You all ought to be supporting Obama. He's given you everything you want and your corporate masters. But you know the reason you can't support him? Come on. You know why. You know why you can't support him. Right? Exactly. Because you're all racist pigs. That's why. To greater or lesser degrees. And Barack Obama is not totally white. But you dumbasses, you refer to him as all your racist slurs. His mama was white. His daddy wasn't. Oh, you people make me sick. You just turn my stomach. Environmental groups say a spill in the Arctic's inaccessible waters would be more catastrophic than what occurred in the Gulf of Mexico. Republicans, meanwhile, are threatening to excoriate the president for turning his back on energy security if he says no to Shell. Representative Gary Gardner, a Colorado Republican on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, said, quote, Americans are reeling from staggering prices at the pump. So the president has to justify to the American people why we are not replacing Saudi Arabian oil imports with U.S. produced oil. And see, nobody will challenge that statement. The oil that comes from the Arctic, if such a thing, well, when such a thing happens, this dumb little cheesy bastard, Cory Gardner, the Colorado Republican, I don't know, what does he envision? That oil is packaged up and sent to gas stations or refineries in the United States? And then after the refineries, it goes immediately to your friendly local gasoline distributor? This is where Republicans demonstrate a kind of political ignorance that says they pander to their sick base and the truth flies out the window. They don't care. Do you think the oil companies want to sell this here in the United States? We're broke! It goes to China. It goes to India. It goes wherever the oil companies dictate, Corey, you half-wit. But the Republican bobbleheads out there listen to old Cory Gardner, Colorado Republican. They say, yeah, well, that's because Barack Obama is a Negro. Well, okay, he's a socialist from Kenya. That's what he is. Yeah, Corey, you tell him. In the meantime, these half-wits, 5 years from now, they're going to be paying $7 a gallon for gas. It just never stops, does it?
Child is black, child is white. The whole world looks upon a sight, a beautiful sight. And now a child can understand that this is the law of all the land, all the land. The world is black, the world is white, it turns by day.
They go long, 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 though I must let it be known that this boy's made the time.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Well, I can't believe I've seen the day when all our rights will be taken away. Would you have guessed that a little collie weed could ever bring all these vultures in a feed? What it feels like we're living in a police state.
10 before the hour. So Shell wants to drill 10, count them 10, exploratory oil wells beneath the Arctic water off the coast of Alaska. And they promise, cross their heart and hope to die, that they got everything under control. We really, 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 really do. Nothing bad is going to happen. We swear we're going to manage the drilling process safely. We're going to protect the sweet little polar bears. Aren't they cute? I like the polar bear cubs. Oh, and we're going to make sure that nothing happens to them. Can you imagine a polar bear cub just slicked down with Alaska crude, which is really high sulfur, sticky, nasty, horrible stuff? Wouldn't that be awful? We're not going to let that happen. We're going to safeguard the air quality for residents. We are, and we're going to respond quickly if, God forbid, there's a spill, but there won't be. Brendan Cummings is a senior counsel at the Center for Biological Diversity, you know, one of those good guys, is suing to stop Shell. Now, you'd think Oh, never mind. I almost said you'd think the Justice Department would sue to stop him, but I lost my head there for a moment. Anyway, Brendan Cummings says, quote, if the Obama administration approves drilling in the Arctic, it will demonstrate that they, the Obama administration, have learned nothing from the Gulf spill, end quote. And, of course, officials in Barack Obama's government say only that they will thoroughly review Shell's new proposal. Kendra Barkoff, a spokeswoman for the Interior Department, which oversees most of this process, said, quote, we need to continue to take a cautious approach in the Arctic that is guided by science and the voices of North Slope communities, most of which would be native Alaskans. Now, what do you think native Alaskans have to say about it? Well, they're not all that important. We had Native Americans, too. Remember them? Huh? I guess a Native Alaskan is a Native American. Oh, no, wait a minute. Oh, I don't know. It just gets all so confusing. But like most imperial countries who have sent their white invaders someplace, we usually take a look at the indigenous people and figure out the quickest and least painful to us way to exterminate them. Putting smallpox on the blankets, or was it typhus? Smallpox. That was pretty effective for the Redskins here, right? Now, Alaska is a different story because, you know, it's only been a state for, what, how many years? 40, 50? I don't even know. That long? Okay. Those folks weren't really red men. they look more like, you know, Asians. And, you know, it was so far away, we didn't care until, who is it, Secretary of State? Seward? Seward's Folly, that's right. Seward bought Alaska. He did. And I guess when you buy a chunk of land like that, you get everything that comes with it, including the indigenous tribes. So the indigenous tribes, to the extent that they, you know, hunt whales and seal and do they hunt polar bear, or is that one of their gods? I don't know. I'm displaying my ignorance of native culture where it concerns what we call Alaska. The Inuit culture to me is, just a complete blank. Only what I've seen on the National Geographic Channel, and what I usually see there is the ritual involved in Native Alaskans going out for the hunt. It's a little bit different from big old tough white Americans who arm themselves with semi-automatic weapons and go shoot pheasant or deer. Look what I brought home, Ruby! Now, goddammit, chop it up and put it in the freezer. Yeah, they have a different way of doing it. But those people, the native Alaskans, will be consulted by Shell. Now, wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't you love to sit in on a meeting, a tribal council of native Inuit or native Alaskans, I should say, sitting in a, a longhouse with corporate executives or lobbyists from Shell, while the Shell oil people speak to them in pidgin English. We come, this land of snow and magic in the sky, magic light. We come to put holes down where powerful energy live. And so we will provide you with many things to make whale easier to catch. Don't you think that's about how it goes? We'll be back after the break. Do stick around. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. In my notes here, I have three words: nasty, insidious, lies. Nasty, insidious, lies. Wow. What do you suppose that's all about? George W. Bush, Barack Obama's promises. I don't know. Now, this is about something even worse, in my opinion. A lot of talk here lately about education and school teachers and so on and so forth, and how education in this country is in the toilet. We rank all of a sudden way down the list where it concerns science and math, especially the applied sciences, you know, because the applied sciences or the hard sciences, whatever you want to call it, conflicts with religious nonsense. And the biggest state in the union, Texas, in terms of their school book purchases, the state of Texas can pretty much dictate what is going to be contained in certain school textbooks. That's because they spend a lot of money. And textbook publishers, of course, are only interested in money. They are not the least bit interested in educating children. When educating children is placed on this side of the ledger and making a profit is placed on that side of the ledger with the school textbook publishers, the making a profit side wins every time. Don't kid yourself. Now, up to the immediate past, I'm talking within the past decade, you might say that the school textbook publishers were only influenced by boards of education, usually state boards of education. The state boards of education would sit down and decide how much truth they wanted their kids in their school systems to learn and how much nonsense they wanted their children to learn where it concerned religious dogma or religious superstition. And in the immediate past, there would usually be the number of members of the board, state school boards, that were rational usually outnumbered the number who were irrational and promoted religious bigotry, dogmatism, and catmatism. No, just kidding. And superstition. But a new wrinkle now, relatively new, and that is the corporate sponsorship of your child and my child's education. Corporate sponsorship. Now, part of this comes from the fact that we Americans are lazy, disinterested citizens. We have no interest in the kind of government that takes over. We just don't care anymore. We haven't cared for a long time. We don't go vote. And when we do go vote, even though we know that the voting machines are rigged, we don't do anything about it. We don't ask for paper ballots. We just go, oh, okay, the voting machines are rigged. Oh, I don't care. We don't care what kind of duplicity and lies and deceit goes on at the highest levels of government. We just don't care anymore. And we don't care about how our kids are educated. We just want little tykes out of our way from, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon. And the kid better bring home good grades. We don't care how. What, help with the homework? Are you kidding me? I'm busy. I got things to do. We just don't care. Well, corporate America does care. They want to produce a race of consumers not unlike the consumers in Brave New World, but without the genetic manipulation. Eventually that'll come, but not quite yet. There's an organization called the American Coal Foundation. And it is doing something that is pretty horrific. It's working in conjunction with a capitalist corporatist organization that wants to destroy your child. That organization is called Scholastic Incorporated. Scholastic Incorporated. These two working together, the American Coal Foundation and Scholastic Incorporated, are perpetrating the kind of insidious... What did I write down? Yeah. Nasty, insidious propaganda. Filling our little kid's head with lies. And you know what? You and I don't care. We don't care. Go ahead. Fill them with lies. We don't give a damn. We allow our kids to eat stuff like Sugar Smacks or whatever the hell, Cap'n Crunch. You know, we allow our kids to eat crap. We allow our kids to be exposed to carcinogens and poisons and pollutants. And then we scream and go insane when we give birth to kids with autism or ADHD or all sorts of developmental problems. We run around with our hair on fire and we blame things like, oh, I know, vaccines. When in fact, I don't know if it's fact or not, but in my opinion, we have set up an environment where we are destroying everything we touch. But we don't care. I mean, we're too busy playing with our iPods or iPads or iPunks or eyeballs or whatever. You know, we just don't care. We really don't. We don't care who goes to Washington to represent us. We don't care how corporate America is taking over. We don't care how the capitalists are destroying everything that this country might have been. We don't care that the tobacco industries, that the coal industries, that the energy industries, that the nuclear industries, we don't care. We don't give a goddamn, because if we did, you see, we'd do something. And we do nothing. We do nothing. Absolutely nothing. So, Scholastic Incorporated and the American Coal Foundation, they're doing something. Oh, yes. Now, there are three advocacy groups who are trying to fight back. Very tiny, underfunded, small groups of, isn't this a quaint term? Concerned citizens. Remember when every American was a concerned citizen? Or did that never happen? Am I just imagining a past that never existed? I guess so. But it seems to me at one time, for a brief shining moment, everybody in this country was a concerned citizen. We were concerned about what was going on, but no longer. We just don't care anymore. Anyway, there are three advocacy groups: Rethinking Schools, Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, and Friends of the Earth. These three, small, underfunded, labeled by the right wing as being subversive or communist or fascist or socialist or anti-American or anti-business or anti-jobs, these three organizations are trying to fight back with a writing campaign against Scholastic Incorporated and the American Coal Foundation. Now, what have they done? Well, Scholastic Incorporated has been distributing materials in fourth grades that the American Coal Foundation paid Scholastic Inc. to develop. You're way ahead of me on this one, aren't you, right? The three groups say that Scholastic Inc.'s little package called
United States of Energy. Excuse me. United States of Energy package gives children a one-sided view of coal, failing completely to mention the negative effects on the environment and human health. Now, as reported in today's New York Times, the curriculum that Cole has put together is called Unfit for Fourth Graders by these three tiny, underfunded, underpopulated advocacy groups that are trying to fight back. Now, what is the objective of Scholastic Inc. and the American Coal Foundation, and how are these three groups trying to fight back? Stick around.
Synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I saw the story, as reported in this morning's New York Times, that I put notations around it. Nasty, insidious, lies. Scholastic Incorporated, working with the American Coal Foundation, has put together something for fourth grade school kids curriculum materials that talks about the wonderful advantages of a coal-based society and none of the negative effects on the environment or human health. This company, Scholastic Inc., was not available for comment when questioned by the Times. Anyway, Scholastic Inc.'s in-school marketing division, which produced this curriculum in partnership with the Coal Foundation, often works with corporate America. It does things to undermine and destroy the very premise on which you send your child to school, and that is to get an objective, commercial-free product, unendorsed education. You know, isn't that why you send your kid to school? I mean, that's why I send mine to school. Let's see, English, grammar, foreign language, math, appropriate to the age, social studies, appropriate to the age, you know, art, music, science, isn't that? No, your child goes to school now, he or she is inundated in a very subtle and insidious, that's why I wrote that word down, way, a particular corporate point of view is being injected into little Bobby or little Susie's head. This is simply not right. But like I said before, we don't care. I mean, this goes on. We don't care. We have divorced ourselves from this whole system. Anyway, the programs put together by Scholastic's in-school marketing division, the programs are, quote, this is according to the company website, quote, designed to promote client objectives and meet the needs of target teachers, students, and parents, and to make a difference by influencing attitudes and behaviors, end quote. So your little Bobby or Billy or Susie or Kanisha or whatever, your kid or your niece or your nephew, you know, whatever kid is in your life, promoting client objectives is what your child is being exposed to a captive student audience. Now that isn't education, says Susan Lynn, director of a campaign for a commercial-free childhood, one of the three advocacy groups that are trying to fight back, underfunded, understaffed, tilting at windmills kind of advocacy groups that are still existent or extant in this country. They still try, Friends of the Earth. Isn't that quaint? You and I don't give a goddamn about Friends of the Earth. You're a friend of the Earth. I'm a friend of the Earth, right? We set out our little blue recycle bins every Wednesday or whatever, right? We're friends of the Earth. We don't care. I'm sorry. I know you're a Democrat. I know you're a liberal. I know you're a progressive. I know you try. I know you do little things that you do. So do I. But you know the bottom line? We don't care. Not enough to make changes. We don't care. So anyway, Susan Lynn, director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, said in a statement, promoting client objectives to a captive student audience? In this instance, fourth graders. How old is that? 9? That is not education. It's predatory marketing. She goes on to say, by selling its privileged access to children to the coal industry, Scholastic Inc. is commercializing classrooms and undermining education. End quote. Wow. This woman sounds like an absolute socialist. I mean, really? There's nothing wrong with capitalism. The thing about capitalism, you have to get the little tykes at the earliest stage, because if you don't, somebody else will get them and talk to them about these crazy environmental issues. Global warming, oh my God. Somebody's going to expose them to Al Gore's book. Oh no! Quick! Move! Scholastic Inc. is a $2 billion company whose books and other education materials are in 9 of 10 American classrooms. Last year, the group Campaign for Commercial-Free Childhood, the good group, the good guys, that group criticized the company, Scholastic Inc., for its Sunny D book spree, featured in Scholastic's Parent and Child magazine, in which teachers were encouraged to have classroom parties and collect labels from Sunny Delight, a sugary beverage, to win free books. The Campaign for Commercial-Free Childhood has also objected to Scholastic Inc.'s promotion of children's Claritin in materials it distributed into the classrooms. A drug company product, a sugar industry product, a coal industry promotional activity. And you thought your child went to school to learn basic math, how to construct a sentence, and what makes it rain? Oh my goodness, you are so wrong. More when we come back.
And I am guilty, I am war, and I am the root of all evil. Lord, and I can't drive on the left side of the road. Cause it's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life, it's a hard life.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So the encroachment by capitalist corporate America, and very blatantly, you know, I'm not so naive as to believe they never attempted this before, but it's getting worse and worse. Corporate America owns our system of government, and we don't care. It pretty much dictates U.S. foreign policy. We don't care. It damn sure dictates tax policy. We don't care. And now it is working insidiously and deliberately to influence, no, excuse me, to own the education system in this country. And it's moving rather rapidly. Scholastic Inc. is a company that, in this particular instance, has worked with the American Coal Foundation to put together curriculum materials for fourth graders. And as you can imagine, it is certainly not Oh, what's the phrase? Oh, that's right. Fair and balanced. Anyway, three groups. Rethinking Schools, Campaign for Commercial-Free Childhood, and Friends of the Earth are all trying to resist the corporatization of the American classroom, and they're really struggling. But you and I don't care. We don't give a damn. Thank goodness somebody's doing it, but I'm too busy to pay attention. The book, the material that the coal company put together with Scholastic Inc. is titled "The United States of Energy." It's designed, as the Times says, to paste a smiley face on the dirtiest form of energy in the world. That's according to Bill Bigelow, an editor of Rethinking Schools. They're one of the good guys magazine. He says, quote, "These materials teach children only the story the coal industry has paid Scholastic to tell." Huh? Now, the material put together by Scholastic Inc. says that coal. Here we go. Coal is. You can hear the music in the background. Little banjo music, maybe a little bit of brass, kind of like Appalachian Spring. You know, that kind of music. Just. Anyway, the materials say that coal is produced in half of the 50 states. That America has 27% of the world's coal resources. Bum, 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 bum. And that it is the source of half the electricity produced in the nation, with about 600 coal-powered plants operating around the clock to provide electricity and the American standard of living. We are, after all, God-fearing exceptionalists. What the material doesn't mention are the negative effects of mining and burning coal, like the removal of Appalachian mountaintops, the release of sulfur dioxide, the release of mercury, the release of arsenic, the monstrous accumulation of toxic wastes in pools that eventually breach their little dams and rush down and envelop entire communities. The mining accidents, the death, the destruction, the lung disease, the cancer, the mesothelioma. Nah, they leave that part out. Well, that's not fair. Mr. Bigelow, who is Bill Bigelow, an editor of Rethinking Schools magazine, that's one of the good guys. Bigelow says the curriculum pretends that it's going to talk about the advantages and disadvantages of different energy choices. Fourth graders have an energy choice. You didn't know that? Oh, yeah. Different energy choices. They don't do it, though. And the curriculum pretends, according to Mr. Bigelow, that it's going to align with national learning standards, but it doesn't. He added, the fact that coal is a major source of greenhouse gases in the United States is entirely left out. There's no hint that coal has any disadvantages. Well, Mr. Bigelow, I mean, come on, after all, this is a fourth grade classroom. You want these children to be taught objectively? Really? You want them to find out that the industry providing these just beautifully put together curriculum materials is really killing them? Well, that wouldn't be productive for the coal industry, would it? According to an article by Alma Hale Patey, she's the executive director of the American Coal Foundation, they are the bad guys. According to Alma's article, it's posted on Coal Blog, quote, "The United States of Energy went to 66,000 fourth grade teachers in 2009. When the Times tried to contact Alma, she did not return calls, and the American Coal Foundation was too busy to talk. either. See, they don't have to. They don't have to talk to anybody. Certainly not some picky, inquisitive newspaper. Come on. This is the United States of... United States of America. And people talk about the burden that school teachers have. Now, can you imagine, can you just imagine you're a fourth grade school teacher about to begin the new school year, and your principal drops off on your desk a packet. A packet. And it says on the outside, it's from Scholastic Inc. And in the middle of the packet, it says, curriculum package for United States of Energy. And you look at that and you think, what's this? And you're a fourth grade teacher and you open it up and you take a look. And about fifth, eighth, tenth sentence in to this capitalist propaganda, you realize what you have in front of you, what you have, a capitalist propaganda that is, like all propaganda, one-sided, misleading, untrue, false, fake, serves a certain interest, and that interest, either as a direct product or a byproduct of its energies, will kill the children you're about to teach, and you, eventually. As a matter of fact, it'll kill, the neighborhood. It will, and it'll kill your town, your county. Eventually, it'll kill your state. Eventually, it kills the continent on which you live. And eventually, it kills the whole goddamn planet and everything on it. And it's called global climate change, brought to you by your friends at the American coal industry. Scholastic Inc. Wow. You know, that sounds like, ooh, let's all study for the test. Ooh, I'm going to go on to college. Ooh, I'm a scholar. Scholastic Incorporated. So you're the fourth grade teacher, and you're sitting there, and you think, well, I really don't want to do this, but my principal has just laid it on my desk. About 3 days ago, her principal received this box of these packets and a letter from the local Board of Education instructing her to distribute these to her teachers. And so it goes back up the chain. And the school board, they made the decision to accept this stuff because, well, it's free and it's really slick looking and it is about the United States of Energy. And of course, nobody on the school board, which is a political job, took the time to read what it is. They were too busy running for the school board. Vote for me and I will get prayer back in the schools where it belongs. And besides, capitalism is what made this country great. Capitalism is what continues to make this country great. Why, look around you. Do you not see greatness? Except where you see those nasty-ass, insidious little left-wing commentators and their little radio programs or their blogs or their newspaper columns. They're always trying to undermine everything good about this country. Damn them. But we, the school board, have the power. So distribute these materials put together by the American Coal Foundation and Scholastic Inc. Tell our children the new truth. Coal is good. Acid rain is better. Global warming and ultimate extinction is best. But you know what? You and I don't care. We don't care. We don't care what the school board says. We don't care what capitalist America says. We just don't care. We really don't. Let me just qualify that a bit. Not enough of us care.
In a rusty roll, empty, because yelling and don't stop here anymore.
Talk lately generated by this freak in Wisconsin, this governor who decided to destroy public unions, which included school teachers and others. And all this vitriol being heaped on school teachers by the capitalist neo-fascist right in this country, the corporatists, the right-wingers, the teabaggers, the Republican Party, all of them cockroaches who are undermining and destroying the whole society. And teachers, for the most part, have been taking a real beating over the past couple of months. And the goal, of course, is to drive people out of the teaching business by taking away the idea of tenure, taking away seniority, installing systems to determine whether or not a teacher can retain his or her job based on only one criterion, performance of the entire classroom, which takes into consideration nothing regarding where the child is coming from. What sort of environment? Did the kid have breakfast? Is the kid being beaten or kept in a cage when the child goes home after school? Don't laugh. Is there violence in the home? Is there drug addiction? Are there books in the home? Is it all television and video games? You see, so the teachers are being told, oh no, it's your responsibility because we Americans, we don't care. You do it. And when the teachers, of course, working under these hideously insane programs like No Child Left Behind or Race to the Top or whatever, you know, whatever the latest incarnation of this garbage is called, the teachers who are working under these kinds of strictures, these kinds of demands, while at the same time being forced to hand out capitalist material, corporatist material that has nothing to do with education and everything to do with producing a little group of brain-dead, unaware, unconscious consumers, is it any wonder the teachers are saying, wait, what are you doing? What are you saying? Now consider the idealistic teacher who graduates with her degree, gets certified as a school teacher, and then settles herself into a $30,000 a year job. And she or he does it because he is committed to educating kids. But then there's this great awakening, right? Great awakening when Mr. School Teacher or Ms. School Teacher realizes what they're up against within their system, their school system, within their state system, from the public and the government. Meanwhile, they have all these little kids who show up originally, with very few exceptions. There are exceptions, of course, but when they show up, kindergarten, first grade, yeah, you have some kids with lots of severe problems who show up to be educated. But the school teacher takes a look at all these little faces, these 20, 30, 35 kids in his or her classroom. And the teacher thinks, well, this is why I'm here. I'm going to help these kids learn. I'm going to help them develop a lifelong sense of curiosity. I'm going to help educate them. And then when the school teacher finds out after the first year or the first couple of months or the first 2 or 3 years exactly her place in the system that is not interested in the least in educating children, but is interested in turning out like a clockwork system, uneducated, corporate influenced automatons. What does she do? What does he do? What does the school teacher do? Some of them move on. Well, I've got an education degree. If I pick up a couple of years of psychology, maybe I can go to work in the corporate system. I think I'll go back and get into nursing. I've had all the science that I need. Maybe that's what I'll do. Or they stick it out. But the bottom line in all this is that there's no reason for American parents not to understand fully what's going on. This incursion, this invasion into the classroom by these private enterprise corporate structures who provide kids with things like the United States of Energy about the coal industry. There's no reason why any parent who has children in school isn't aware of everything that goes on in that kid's classroom, except for one thing. For the most part, we American parents don't care. And so we turn our kids over to a system designed to keep them uneducated, not curious. Can you imagine a curious kid sitting down with the United States of Coal and raising his hand, or the United States of Energy and raising his hand and saying, but teacher, I see this thing on TV all the time about something called mesothelioma. It's a lung disease, and all these lawyers who want people to call them because, and the teacher has to say, well now, Susie, that's something that maybe you can talk about in your Sunday school class in church. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.